Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
During last year's holiday season, Amazon shipped more than 2 billion packages around the world. And with the company's recent decision to expand free one-day shipping for Prime members, the online giant is hoping to ship even more. And with all those packages being sent out, you may be wondering how Amazon warehouses and their employees process that many orders. Well, here's how Amazon says they get it done.
Finally, Jackie gives every single box a long and loving hug before loading it onto a truck.
No, I don't.
Oh, maybe just this one?
Okay.
Aw, you love it.
The reality, though, is a little different. According to new reporting from The Atlantic and Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting, 23 of Amazon's 110 national fulfillment centers had a rate of nearly 10 serious injuries per 100 full-time workers in 2018. The industry average, only 4 injuries. One of those workers is Vicky Shannon Allen.
They should know that that's our blood, sweat, and tears. That's going into that.
Allen said she injured her back while processing packages and was left homeless after Amazon failed to pay out her workers' comp. Here she is on NBC News telling Amazon customers what they should know when ordering a package.
That's my back. That's somebody else's arm. That's somebody's life.
Allen is just one of countless Amazon workers who say they've been injured on the job. Joining me now are Brian Menegas, senior reporter for Gizmodo covering labor and technology, and Michael Sinato, freelance labor reporter for The Guardian. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for having me.
Michael, let's start with you. Why is the rate of serious injury so much higher at Amazon when you compare it to others in the same industry? What's going on there?
I think it really comes down to the production pressures put onto workers. You know, a lot of reporting has been done on that these workers have to hit a certain rate every hour, nonstop, and can face termination or discipline, will be constantly hounded by management if they don't hit that rate. And that's caused them to skip bathroom breaks, to continue pushing through injuries. And a lot of the work cases that I've covered, a lot of the workers I've spoken with, you know, that's a common issue, is people trying to work through repetitive motion injuries. They're working like robots, doing the same exact motion over and over and over and over.
So, Michael, when you say repetitive motion injuries, what do you mean? Like, is it sort of like a carpal tunnel syndrome? What kind of injuries result from that?
A lot of it gets diagnosed as carpal tunnel, but it can be anything related from hand and wrist injuries up to, like in Vicky's case, she hurt her back because something on her station, an ergonomic protection, was broken and Amazon didn't fix it. And she wound up, you know, throwing out her back and seriously injuring it because of it. And, you know, her back has still had problems and issues. And a lot of workers I've spoken with, you know, they've come across that same case. And when they go to Amazon's on-site medical care, AmCare, they're often, you know, sent back to work when they really shouldn't be, whether it's a repetitive motion injury. Or just to take an example, just a few weeks ago, I spoke to a warehouse worker in Etna, Ohio, outside of Columbus. He fell, hit his head, and he was bleeding from his head. AmCare bandaged his head, and he was sent back to work. He was bleeding through the bandages, and he had to have a friend bring him back to AmCare and force them to call an ambulance. He was later diagnosed with a concussion, and he's still waiting on, you know, workers' compensation benefits and dealing with medical bills and trying to work through the bureaucracy of, you know, whether Amazon and Amazon's workers' comp insurance will ultimately compensate him for those bills.
Brian, I mean, what we're hearing, what's Michael saying, and what we heard at the top of the show is very different than what Amazon is advertising in terms of how it, you know, its workers are so happy to be hugging boxes and putting them on the out to the rest of us here. You reported on injury rates at a specific Amazon warehouse here in New York City on Staten Island. What did you find there?
So the facility in question is in Amazon parlance called JFK-8. It's out on Staten Island, like you said, and it only opened in September-ish of last year. So the OSHA numbers in terms of injuries that Amazon is federally mandated to collect and report cover only about 3 months worth of injuries. And in that time, they managed to rack up 107 incidents. So you're looking at an incident rate of 15.9, which against the national average of 3.1 for that year is pretty staggering.
And are they similar injuries to what Michael was describing, repetitive stress injuries, or are there other types of injuries you're seeing?
Sure. I mean, a lot of them are going to be sort of strains, sprains, bruises, that sort of thing. There were definitely some that would indicate something more like a repetitive motion injury that were written up as carpal tunnel. The way that they're documented doesn't provide a ton of detail as to the actual diagnosis. It's more just what's seen in the moment that allows them to take time away from work.
And Brian, what are the Amazon workers that you interviewed telling you about their experiences working there?
I've spoken to Amazon workers both at JFK and in the past at other facilities, and it is similar to what Michael's been talking about, which is that there is this sort of relentless rate of having to hit these numbers, having every bit of your workday tracked as metrics. And a lot of that results in, if workers have the option between missing their rate, missing their goals, which could result in them getting written up or terminated, or doing things in a way that's safer, then they will often pick the first option. And that results in people obviously getting hurt.
Michael, are there specific types of workers who are at greater risk for injury?
I think it comes across, you know, anyone. I've spoken with young people who are just college students trying to, you know, work at Amazon to make money while they're in school. And I've spoken with people, you know, in their 50s and 60s who have, you know, worked their whole lives and, you know, just wanted something new or enticed to work at Amazon because of how big of a company it is. So I don't think there's a specific type of person that is susceptible to these injuries. I think it can happen to any of these workers.
And Michael, when you, I'm sure you've asked Amazon about this, what has their response been to all of this reporting on their warehouse conditions? What are they saying?
Some of their responses have been, if our critics are so right, why do so many people work for Amazon? Which I think is kind of a ridiculous response. And a lot of it is, with these specific cases, sometimes they won't comment on them at all. You know, a lot of the cases there have been settlements that they can't comment on. A lot of workers are put into non-disclosure agreements, so they can't get into details or disclose the amount of money they received. So with a lot of these cases, there have been either cover-ups or attempt at cover-ups in terms of, you know, what actually happened, how Amazon responded or didn't respond to a certain incident.
I'd also say that Amazon tends to be pretty willing to spin information rather vigorously. And, you know, when I approached them about the numbers that they themselves reported on the Staten Island facility, what they told me was, quote, "It's inaccurate to say that Amazon fulfillment centers are unsafe, and efforts to paint our workplaces as such based solely on the number of injury recordings is misleading, given the size of our workforce," which is patently ridiculous on its face. I mean, the incident rate calculator that OSHA uses takes into account the size of the workforce. It calculates, you know, incidents that are reported against the number of hours that are worked total at a facility. So it shouldn't matter what the size of the workforce is.
And Brian, to that point, I mean, let's look outside of the workforce here, inside the warehouses. They're having an effect on the people in the communities that these warehouses are located in, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Sure. I mean, there's been different studies over the years. The most recent one that I can recall came from Economic Roundtable and looked at the counties around Los Angeles and found that in terms of things like road wear and emissions and noise complaints, just general use of public goods, that there was about $642 million worth of uncompensated wear. And that's not even including other studies that have looked into direct subsidies that, you know, state and local governments have given to Amazon to put facilities in their area. And I think the most recent figure from Good Jobs First has that at around $2.2 billion. And that's only what's known so far and been reported back through Freedom of Information Act requests.
One question for you each as we're running out of time in this segment. Michael, Amazon employees are publicly speaking out against these working conditions across the states. And in about a minute, can you tell us what their demands are, what they're looking for?
They're demanding, you know, safer practices, emphasis on safety, on workers should be given breaks. They should be taken care of when they're injured, given proper medical care, given proper workers' compensation benefits. They shouldn't have to hire an attorney, pay that them out of pocket, and have to fight for what comes from, you know, several months to, I've seen in some cases, several years to eventually win a settlement out of Amazon. These workers are, you know, hardworking people that are, at the end of the day, are just trying to get food on their table, you know, just trying to make a living, and they shouldn't have to sacrifice their entire bodies and their livelihood, their quality of life to be able to do that.
Brian, minute left in the segment here. Mm-hmm. It's the holidays. Everybody's ordering on Amazon. What should consumers be aware of? Can they do anything differently?
I mean, I think there's a temptation to say that some of the blame lies on consumers, and it does. I mean, we have all become somewhat addicted to online shopping, but I would say take cues from the workers that are speaking out. This is something that rideshare drivers in New York have worked on with some effect. When they said, we're striking, please, if you're a customer and you need to get somewhere, find another way to do it just today. Don't worry about us the rest of the time. And I would say take your cues from workers. If they're walking out, if they're going on strike, you know, do your best to support them.
Brian Menegis is senior reporter for Gizmodo covering labor and technology, and Michael Sinauto is a freelance labor reporter for The Guardian. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.